Hey girl, you feel that? That's boyfriend material. This is episode 14, All Good Things from 2010. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
I'm Joe Too. And this episode is brought to you by 12mm 304 micron HD super tough LD polyethylene coated woven high density scrim.
Oh, you mean whatever you just said?
No, that's boyfriend material.
So now what is that material used for, or how is it related to this Robert Durst movie?
It's used in body bags.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
Yeah. Sorry, that's why I thought that I was really funny.
I like it. No, I like it. I was thinking, because there's a lot of different things, you know, the episode of Magic Mike's that we just recorded, that we just put out for G.I. Joe, we said hit the superfecta of dancing, fighting, shirtless, and stripping, right?
This hits
a weird new trifecta where we have Gosling as a kid, Gosling as an old man, and Gosling as a woman. So I was like, there's a lot of different ways that you could bring this material conversation, and
yeah,
you went somewhere I wasn't expecting at all.
Well, can we just call him Robert Durst in this episode?
Sure, absolutely, because David Marks. So here's a little bit of trivia.
Give the background.
I've been telling you about,
yes,
this is a Robert Durst movie, and you messaged me, you're like, I don't think this is it. And I was like, no, it definitely is. So here's the trivia. So Andrew Jarecki, who directed this movie, also created The Jinx,
which we saw and loved, and
yes,
we recommend.
Love
if you haven't seen it, it's awesome. It's a true crime docu-series, mini doc, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like six episodes, I think.
I think so. Yeah, it's like a 6-hour thing. Like, it's awesome. There was criticism, I think, in the moment of like, did they do the right thing in, you know, not going to the police when they had this video footage of him basically confessing to the murders at the end, whatever. That's irrelevant, because as TV, it's great TV.
Yes.
But the guy who made that made this, and I feel like, in a way, The Jinx kind of makes this not necessary to view anymore. Like, we're doing it for Gosling, but I feel like this was sort of used, not as a bait to Robert Durst, but Andrew Jarecki, I think, was obsessed with Robert Durst. I think they talk about this movie a little bit in The Jinx, but he wanted to make a movie that Robert Durst could watch and have, like, an emotional reaction to. So after this movie came out, Robert Durst contacted Andrew Jarecki and wanted to be like, no, that's not the whole story. Let me tell you my side of the story, which set up the interviews that became The Jinx. This was kind of like a lore.
If you don't know, Robert Durst was accused, long thought to have murdered a couple people.
A couple of his wives.
A couple of his wives, yes. He's like a very prominent member of New York high society. His dad owned a bunch of real estate. He worked for his dad. And so he kind of like was getting off and around it. You know what I mean? It was like one of these like rich people, you know, good lawyers type things.
Right.
I guess it was kind of like an OJ situation, right?
A little bit, yeah. It's sort of, I mean, not it's white privilege, essentially. And like in the whole,
yes,
like the OJ Made in America thing talks about how like OJ wasn't black, OJ wasn't white, OJ was just OJ. Like he sort
exactly
of transcended race and essentially had white privilege because of his notoriety and fame and money and everything like that. So same, absolutely, good comparison.
Yeah, I think that this is the same thing. So yeah, so Robert Durst, like, he kind of gets off, and the film director was setting out to kind of like open the box on like that he did do this and bring this to people's awareness beyond, you know, like, because I had never, did you ever hear about him before The Jinx?
I don't think so, but I feel like it would have been like, if we grew up in New York, I feel like
maybe
it would have maybe been a thing. I don't know though.
But
like,
we're
I don't
close
know. The movie, and I think from, I don't really remember much of the, because I feel like The Jinx is, not that it's forgettable, but I feel like because of the way that it ended, it kind of makes you forget everything else.
I agree. Yeah. I was talking with Rachel about this.
I completely forgot that that he lived as a woman for a while. Like, that's in The Jinx, too, and I completely forgot that.
That's exactly what I was going to say. As we were watching it, Rachel goes, oh, didn't he used to, like, pretend to be a woman or dress up like a woman? And I was like, oh, I totally forgot that part of The Jinx, because to me, the only part that matters is the end, right? Like, that the end is so emotionally jarring that you don't really remember.
And really what I want now is I want a recreation of The Jinx with Gosling as Robert Durst again, so we can hear Gosling say, what did I do? Kill them all, of course.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think we're ever going to get that, unfortunately.
No, I think Gosling's beyond it, and I think the Jinx and Robert Durst is kind of like wrapped up now. So.
Yep. This was used to sort of lure Robert Durst out. According to Kirsten Dunst, though, who plays his wife in this movie, the one that he basically,
yes,
I mean, from everything that we, you know,
his first wife,
know,
right? Or was it his second wife? Or his first? It's his first.
It's his first wife
that
he murdered, probably, or had murdered, right? Or had, like, somebody, whatever. But he led to her death, but was never charged of it. Because she just, like, a missing persons case. Maybe he confessed to it with Jinx, who knows. But she said while they were filming this movie that Robert Durst, like, showed up on set. So I don't know exactly what he...
That's the least creepy thing you can do.
Ugh, just
when they're shooting a murder movie about you,
yeah,
you just, like, show up on set. like.
And one thing I want to sort of say right up top is I feel, so this is basically a fictionalized retelling of a thing that really happened, but it doesn't say, yes. Like, I don't think it says this was like based on real events. Like, it just sort of positions this as a movie. Look at this crazy story.
But then at the end, and then it's like, well, you know, he's still doing this.
That's what I hate. Like, I think that the closing credits, like the where are they now, essentially, is in like such poor taste. It's about, like, they're like, you know, this woman died or whatever, she's missing, and it's like the character, but like it's actually a real woman.
Yes.
I feel like if they did like a somehow if they sort of pivoted transition and said it's about him, I don't, like, I guess it's all speculation, you can't like legally do that, but I feel like the where are they now about it all, like, I've never watched a movie, I don't think, that wasn't like
fiction.
A comedy, and want to know like where the characters wind up, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Or just even any fictional story, it's never like,
right,
Tim drove off into the sunset. It's like, no, like, you don't tell that because you don't need to, because it's a fictional story, so like, why do we need to pretend? Yeah, it was weird. It was very strange.
Yeah, I don't like it. So that was my big problem. And I mean, I think this movie's good. I think it's fine. I think Gosling's good. I think Kirsten Dunst is great.
Yeah.
She said at some point this was the best performance she's ever given. And I think she's really good in this movie.
I think so too.
I just think between the jinx existing and between like just sort of weird stuff like that at the end, and I feel like toward the end things kind of rush.
Yeah, I agree.
It's not
because
great.
As I was watching it, I was like, I feel like we've been watching this movie for like 2 hours, and it's not a long movie. It's an hour and 40, hour 35, whatever. And I like hit down and I was like, oh yeah, we're like at the last 5 minutes, but I felt like
there should have been a lot more.
There should have been a lot more, yeah. I felt like we were like halfway through it when we got to that. Maybe it was just because the jinx is 6 hours and I was kind of prepared for that or what. We were halfway through it and I was like, oh, we have so much more to wrap up. And then it was like 5-10 minutes left. So
I think the problem is that the movie wants to tell the story about Kirsten Dunst going missing, but I feel like the movie also wants to tell the story, which it doesn't do well, of the rest of his life. That
yes.
The structure that this is told through is the like the depositions or whatever of him being questioned for in like in 2002 or whatever of the disappearance, I think, of Kirsten Dunst and the murder of Philip Baker
Hall.
But you're
right.
I understand that as a framing device, and I sort of see, but I feel like if you cut all that out, I mean, maybe it's too short of a movie, I don't know, but you just sort of end it with like a him getting away and like living like a woman, like it's a weird ending, but I feel like it doesn't feel as half-baked in a way.
I agree. No, I agree with you 100%. I think that they should be either focused on him at the trial type situation and giving you like snippets of the background.
Yeah.
And did like a, what was it, Zeffingly Evil type situation,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you get like like little flashes of the all of it, or you go just Kirsten Dunst and their relationship. You end it when she disappears and he chucks the body into the water, right?
Yeah.
Like that's
mm-hmm.
That's the closings that I want. Like those are the bookends that I would want from this. So,
although him chucking those bags in the water, I think that's Philip Baker Hall's body. Like I don't think we ever actually see him dump her body. Like the movie kind of pulls like a bait and switch here, where she goes to his office and steals the ledger to show that like he's in some kind of corrupt business dealing, some shady underhanded stuff. She mails that, and as she's mailing it, there's like car headlights, and she like looks panicked and terrified.
Then but
then
they cut to like
Gosling in the dress dumping the bags. But later we find out that that's him getting rid of Philip Baker Hall. Like I don't know, and I still don't know, and I don't remember if he was the one who actually killed Kirsten Dunst, but he orchestrated something to that effect.
Yeah. It's weird. Now I want to rewatch The Jinx, to be honest. It'll take me like 5 years before I'm like, I really want to watch it and I don't remember anything. So like that, but I'll get there eventually.
I also, you know, we kind of dropped the ball, I think, here. The first thing I want to say is that we dropped the ball by not having resident historian Mike Manzi in this podcast. Because I don't think I remembered or knew that this was set in the past. But, you know, we have to swim through the murky confusion of history without him.
Yeah, resident, we could have used it. I mean, but this isn't really like a period piece, though, right? It's like not by definition.
I mean, it kind of is. I mean, it goes back and forth. I think. I mean, most of it's set in like 1971, the 70s, and I think up through 82 when she goes missing.
Yeah, yeah, it's weird.
As it starts in like 71 or whatever, we get Gosling with his long shaggy hair and his 70s sideburns and like really kind of looking the part. We're rapidly going to jump back in time toward his earlier stuff, and I wonder if he's going to naturally look like this, sort of with the longer, kind of unkempt look, because I was saying to you that after the next movie we do, after Blue Valentine, there's going to be a 3-year gap where we go from 2010 to 2007, and so like I feel that's going to sort of rapidly push us back further. He's going to be even younger and younger, so you know, we'll see.
Yeah. It's weird going, and now that I'm like, we've done it with Zeff, and like going back, it feels very strange, right? Because there's like periods where like you see them like develop pretty quickly, and it's really weird to see for an actor. Like, them growing up doesn't bother your brain, but, like, going backwards is like, oh, shit, you know what I mean? Like, you're such a child right here. Like, this is it.
Like, especially when we saw Zeph, like, go from whatever, well, I guess, because we did a weird thing on Zack Attack where we went from, like, High School Musical, or we went from, like, whatever 09 was to, like, 06 to go, like, because we did the High School Musicals in order, like, we were going backwards, but we did in order, so we had, like, a huge jump there, but then going back to, like, Summerland and stuff before, it's like, oh, you are really literally a baby.
Yeah, exactly.
Again, not this doesn't have anything to do with Gosling, but my big takeaway, which I did not remember, I did not know, because I don't think I knew, when I saw this for the first time, I think I told you like 6 years ago or something like that, I don't know who of these I knew, but in this movie, there are three members of NBC comedy royalty, like modern comedy royalty. Do you know, I'm sure you know the two.
Kirsten Wiig,
yep, number one.
Yeah, I saw her. Who else?
Kirsten Dunst's brother is played by...
Yeah, Nick Offerman. Yep. I definitely saw him.
So Parks and Rec, we have SNL. And then the third one, I don't think you would know, and he's got a very, very small part. On The Good Place, Chidi, one of the four leads, or I guess with Ted Danson, one of the five leads, Kristen Bell's love interest on that show, he is the attorney's assistant. He's the one who, like, gets the ledger, and then he's the one who wants to push it forward. Like, his boss is like, no, send it back. Like, this is a family matter or whatever. Because, like, he's clearly on the payroll.
He's not the brother from Mike and Dave, is he?
No, that's Sam Richardson. He's from Veep, and he's from Detroiters. This guy, I think, he's been in stuff. But he's going to be in Midsommar, which just, I guess, as you're listening to this, just came out this month, which is a new horror movie from the guy who did Hereditary. But he's going to be in that, and he's in The Good Place. But I don't think he's been in a ton of things. But he is such a small part, like, I guess this must have been one of his first roles, that, like, his character doesn't even have a name. It's, like, whatever the lawyer's name, his assistant. You know what I mean? So it's just, like, oh, like, he's just got a couple lines. But I was like, oh, shit, it's Chidi. But I just thought it was weird that in a movie that is so decidedly serious and unfunny and about murder, to have three people who are basically known for comedy, sort of, not as the stars, but, like, as pretty big roles.
Yeah, Kristen Wiig, like, Rachel was, like, looking at the cast because she was trying to find someone, I forget who, but she, again, you know, she, like, likes to figure out, like, who the actors are, you know, she might recognize them, and she looks at, she's like, Kristen Wiig is in this? And I was like, why the fuck would she be in this movie? Like, it doesn't make any sense, you know, because, like, I'm obviously thinking Bridesmaids, something along these lines. And I'm like, is this like some weird comedic twist on Robert Durst or something?
Well, clearly, this character also likes to party because she brings cocaine into Kirsten Dunst's life.
She does. She likes to party. Yeah, and she just like racks it up like really... Okay. Kirsten Dunst had just had the abortion. I was thinking Kirsten Dunst was pregnant. It was kind of iffy in that scene, like if she still was pregnant, if she just went to like an obstetrician, or did she go to get an abortion? And then she's like, now I'm going to do cocaine. And I was like, cool, that works.
And we will get to that because that is definitely one of the least boyfriend material moments. But let's go through, I just sort of made notes of the moments that either qualify as most or least boyfriend material. So let's sort of, I guess, follow the movie through that. So the first thing, and this is like a real quick, like a 180, is that there's a real tension between Gosling and his dad, who's played by Frank Langella, about whether or not Gosling is going to take over the family business.
Yes.
They've got this place up in Vermont. They open this like health food store called All Good Things, which is the
title
of the movie. Titular health food store. And in one scene, it feels like he rebuffs his dad. Like, no, I'm going to live up here in Vermont. I'm going to live here with my wife, or with Katie, with Catherine, whatever you want to call her.
Yeah.
We're going to do this. And then literally the next scene, we see them locking the door and giving the key over to a woman. And it's like, oh, he gave in to his dad. So, like, back-to-back, real quick, Whiplash style, most boyfriend moment, least boyfriend moment. Not, you know, not definitively for the whole movie, but just nominees. Well, that's a big turnaround.
It is, but at this point of the movie, the way that the story is being told, it seems like he wants to give his wife as much as he can, and he knows that, like, he's kind of, like, coasting off his dad with the health food store. Like, he's not really doing anything. I don't really see this as like a bad moment of him giving up the health food store. Maybe they enjoy it more, but he knows he can provide her more if they're in New York. This isn't really a least or best boyfriend material moment for me. I mean, maybe to me, I see it as a good moment. You know what I mean? Like, if there was an option that I could give Rachel more somehow, I would probably do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Even if that's not what she wants.
But Kirsten Dunst didn't seem like she didn't. It's not like she didn't want it. She used to live in New York. You know what I mean? Like, they kind of just, like, escaped to Vermont because he knew his dad was going to be pissed about her.
Yeah. I think, like, what's difficult is that Gosling even uses that line on her, like, you know, I gave you everything. I gave you this, the apartment in the city, the house in the country. Like, what more
exactly.
do you want? And she's like, I don't like this, but this isn't what I want. So I feel like it's kind of what he thinks she wants, but I don't know if she even, or at least this depiction of her, if she knows what she wants, you know?
She says it. She says, I just want you. Like, I just want to spend time with you. Like, it doesn't matter if we're, like, rich or poor or whatever. She, like, genuinely really likes him, so...
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a bad thing, you know, like trying to provide more, like he wasn't like hurting her by getting rid of the health food store. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like she wasn't invested in it. It wasn't like her parents' store and he made her sell it or something.
Right.
That's why I'm like, I'm kind of indifferent about this one.
Then there's another sort of back to back most and least boyfriend moment when they move back to the city and they have this like gorgeous, like crazy expensive, I'm sure, apartment.
When he walks her
and
in.
He carries her in across the threshold and he's just like,
yes.
you know, very boyfriendy there. And then they have a passionate sex scene where he like you know kind of fingers her
on drop cloths.
Yep.
Yeah,
but then like quickly turn around where it's like, oh no, I won't even talk about kids. Like, we're not even gonna entertain the discussion about kids. I don't want kids. That's final. It's like, oh, like this is, you know, way to take the high, like all the wind out of her sails here and just crush her dreams.
Well, that one I kind of respect too, because like he knows that he's mentally fucked. Like, it's shitty that he was so abrasive with her about it. He knows, and this is, like, part of the story where, shit, the woman from American Horror Story.
Lily Rabe.
When she, like, when he meets up with her finally, like, shortly after this, she's like, does she know how fucked up you are? How bad your brain is? And you know what I mean? Like, stuff like this. So he knows that he doesn't want to have kids because, like, he's emotionally damaged. He's mentally fucked up.
And he's also kind of, and I think it's definitely part of that, but he's also just kind of an asshole because he's telling his friend, he's like, oh yeah, you know, Kirsten Dunst is perfect. And he's like, well, what do you mean perfect? And he's like, oh, she just lets me do whatever I want. She doesn't care. It's like, well, that's not exactly the best trait in a partner, but I sort of get where you're coming from.
You not wanting to have kids isn't necessarily not boyfriendy.
It's not the fact that it's the way he does it.
It's a present. Yeah, that's what I was saying. The presentation is fucked. Yeah, I agree.
To touch on his sort of mental illness here, because he's fucked up because he saw his mom kill herself when he was a kid. And worse than that, we find out at the end that his dad tried to use Gosling, tried to use Robert Durst as like
ploy.
Buffer. Oh, if she sees him, she won't do it. But instead, she did it anyway. And like, he's not that I'm blaming or, you know, saying like, oh, you see your mom kill herself and you're going to go murder women. Like, there's something probably innately wrong already. But
yes,
that didn't help things. But what we do get out of that is he's got that therapy session. And we get some grade A Gosling screaming.
This is why I messaged you last night. I was like, what do we track with Gos? Like, what are the things? Because I knew we tracked screaming, but I didn't know if there was anything else. And I didn't want to spoil that there's an incredible Gosling scream in this movie.
It's so, like, so guttural. You know, he's in the house and he's screaming. He's got somebody outside. I don't remember who it is, but he's just, like, reading a book. And, like, they cut to him and, like, you can hear the scream outside. And she's like,
is it brother,
oh, God.
Maybe?
It might
I
be.
Think they're... Yeah, I think that they're like their summer house or like their dad's like vacation home or something. It's such a great Gosling scream. It definitely needs to be nominated for best Gos scream and probably should win so far.
I think
for
so.
All the ones
it's,
we've seen.
It's a great scream. The next least boyfriend moment nominee that I have is he finds out that Kirsten Dunst is pregnant and does
yes.
not react well and grabs a chair and throws it at the wall, like knocks all these books off the wall and then just like storms out. And I was like, oh, like again, you can be upset, especially after you've had the conversation, but still not a great way to handle yourself.
No, definitely not. Definitely not the way to react to this. You know, you could be a little disappointed, but he's just like angry. Like, just full on anger, rage mode. Yeah, very strange.
And then there's the abortion scene and another least, like, there's so many, like, in a row here. Like, this is, I think, where his life is coming off the rails, and I feel like the dad is putting pressure on him at work. There's the pregnancy stuff he doesn't really want to deal with, but it's another least boyfriend moment where
yes.
he gets out of the cab on the way to the abortion.
Because he's going to pick up the money, because he collects money. What is really going on here? Not to derail this for a little bit.
I don't know. I think it might just be, maybe there, I don't know. Like, there's a bunch of things that could be, but I don't know. I don't know enough to know what it actually is.
They own real estate, right?
Yep.
And it's in Manhattan in Times Square.
Yep.
Which is always fun to think about, that, like, there was a point where Times Square wasn't what you mm-hmm. and I imagined Times Square
yeah.
as. It was
well,
like
they
a
say,
city.
Like, years ago it was a farm.
Yeah, years before that it was a farm. And then now, in this time period, in, like, the 70s, it's, like, all, like, porn theaters
yep.
and fucking mm-hmm. gambling parlors mm-hmm. and, like, all this shit. I think that their dad owned the buildings, but I also think that he owned the businesses. I think that he was the owner of the porn theaters and the parlors and stuff like that. Goss is collecting the money not as rent, but as his, like...
The Vig or whatever?
Yeah, essentially.
Is there something, and I feel like that's another thing that the movie touches on, and maybe I just missed it, maybe we missed it, or... But I feel like it doesn't do it well, because it doesn't really articulate the shady... Like, it's, you know, I guess...
So I'm putting the pieces together, because he has, like, a ledger, he's collecting, like, weekly, they're like, the cops are gonna get there, go get the money before the cops do. If it was Rent, it wouldn't matter, right?
Because I guess it doesn't matter what the shady business dealings are, but I feel like for so much of the movie to kind of be about that, you should be a little bit more clear, I think.
They just kind of like skim over it. It's a backstory, a through line through the story, but they don't explain it enough for it to like make sense, so.
But yeah, it's on the way to the abortion that he's like, hey, you got this, right? I'll catch up with you.
No, he pulls over because he's going to collect money from one of the places.
Yeah.
His dad's like, you have to go collect money there. And when they pull up, we see that the cops are raiding it.
Right, and he calls his dad, and he's just like, things are going down. And his dad's like, get the money.
Go to the next places and pick up the money from those. And he's like, but I'm trying to get this abortion right now.
Right, I'm taking Katie to a place or doing a thing with Katie or something like that. It's just like very like specific, but also vague. And his dad's like, I don't care, get the money. And so he says, go ahead, I'll catch up with you. And then never catches up with her.
Well, yeah, because like the one guy's like dicking around in the porn theater and yeah, whatever. But I mean, obviously you weren't going to catch up with her anyways. Like she knows that you left her there. Which, why you couldn't just reschedule, I don't understand. All of it's weird, but... Okay.
And while all this is happening, I think, you know, now that she doesn't have the health food store, she's trying to make something of her life or more something of her life. Because it feels like she kind of, not in a bad way, but kind of uprooted what she was doing to live this life with Gosling and just like, oh, he's going to take care of me. But then I think she's just kind of bored. And so she goes back to school to become, do we know what she's studying?
Doctor,
okay.
Yeah, because she's going to go to medical school. She gets the acceptance from Albert Einstein Medical School.
Right.
She says it's top pediatric program, which is kind of ironic, right? She wants to be a pediatrician and he doesn't want to have kids.
It's just devastating. It's, you know, it's...
Oof. Yeah.
So there's like a sort of a mixed boyfriend material moment where she has her graduation party and he shows up, which is nice, but he's also miserable there. He tries to get her to leave her own party early, and that's not good. And he's like, I'm going to go wait in the car. And he's like, I'm in the car for what seems like 10 seconds. And he goes back in and literally rips and drags her out.
I think that this, for me, was obviously the least boyfriend material moment.
It's not good.
It's not good. And it made me just question the, like, what the fuck was happening during these times that you could just, like, come in and just, like, drag your wife out by the head. And everybody's like, whoops.
The top trivia on IMDb is that he felt so bad about pulling her hair, and this is real life most boyfriend material moment, that he sent her flowers the next day. Gosling sent Kirsten Dunst flowers because he felt so bad that he had to do this to her while filming the movie.
That's really sweet,
isn't
actually.
That, like, adorable?
Yeah, that's really cute. What a good guy,
what
man.
A guy.
Seriously, that's really, really sweet. I can't believe it.
Because,
awesome.
You know, there's things where if you're in the mind of a killer or whatever, like I think famously, you know, Heath Ledger getting in the mind of the Joker led him to go down this, like, drug path and then wound up dying. Like, you can get really kind of fucked up. But I feel like this is such a kind of a weird, specific thing, and Gosling seems like mostly a normal guy, that he's able to portray the killer. But at the same time, he's like, I'm not this guy, and I feel horrible about what I'm doing.
And in the grand scheme of things, like, it was an acting job. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sure she knew that this had to happen. He didn't improv it, right? Like, it's not like he just, like, went and pulled her hair for no reason. For him to even still feel bad about it after that is pretty cool.
He's just a good guy. Just, you know, that's why we have a podcast about him, because we know that he's a good guy like that.
He's boyfriend material,
he's
man.
He's boyfriend material. This is the point in the movie where, like, Kirsten Dunst sort of disappears, as it were. And so I don't have any more written down most or least boyfriend material moments, because that central relationship has kind of ended in the movie. And this is where we jump forward in time, and he moves to Galveston, Texas, and he begins to live life, starts to, as a mute woman.
Which is awesome, by the way.
Which is, whew, that is a choice.
This is pretty badass. I'm a person that dreams of disappearing, not because I murdered anyone, but just because, like, you know, I like the idea of that, like, you could just, like, disappear. I like being left alone. I was the only child for a long time before my sister came along, so, like, I like the, like, just the calmness of, like, not having to deal with anyone else.
Yeah.
I never imagined dressing up as a woman and pretending to be mute, but that's the most simplistic childlike vision of this happening, right? Like, you're just like, yeah, just fuck it. I'll just pretend to be mute and dress up like a woman and nobody will see me. And it's like the most glaring.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you don't, if that's what I was saying to Rachel while we were watching. I was like, hey, let's go undercover. I don't want anybody to, like, I don't want to draw attention to myself. And it's like, mute cross-dresser.
Oh, boy.
Like, that's the, like, that's exactly what won't draw attention to you.
Oh, boy.
In Texas. In the 70s, right? Like, it's like, come on, man.
And I think it's between the fact that, like, Philip, it's very clearly not real, and also the fact that Gosling, I think, or David Marks or Robert Durst or whatever, kind of gets bored. The guy that he's trying to dupe, Philip Baker Hall, becomes friends with him, and they sort of become, like, weirdly close, but also, you know, that's not going to end well. And then it winds up that Gosling, that Durst kills him and is actually acquitted of that crime because he defends himself, I guess, probably, you know, with high-powered lawyers or whatever, but that it was self-defense, that there was a struggle, that the guy came after him, and he admitted to shooting him, but then he was so worried that people wouldn't believe his story that he sawed up the body and then dumped it in the water. And it's like, oh, well, that's not normal.
Yeah, and how do you get improper disposal of a body? Like, I could see, this is so weird. This brings me back to the whole movie. This whole movie is just glaring white privilege.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we were talking about to me, because it's like, how, like, what person can be like, look, like, I didn't think anybody would believe me that I killed him and it was a scuffle, so I sawed him into little bits, put him in a bag, and threw him in a river.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that doesn't, these two things don't logically connect.
No, not at all.
It's like, I could see if you were like, oh, I ran, and then he went into disguise, or he, like, fled, and, like, the body was still there, but, like, you're not, like, distraught for 3 hours while you're sawing this dude up. You know what I mean? Like,
no, this is like the mark of a sociopath.
This was the, what was the other one too? Like, To Catch a Murderer or something?
Making a Murderer? I think so.
Yeah.
About the uncle and the nephew?
What was the one about the woman that was like orchestrating all of this?
Oh, with the pizza delivery guy.
Yes.
Evil genius, I think.
Evil genius, yeah. It reminds me of that, where they're like, yeah, like, well, we had the freezer, and there was a head in it, but like, we just kept it because we were nervous.
Ugh, yeah.
And it's like, No, you didn't. You're fucking crazy.
But I guess you're able, like, this sets precedent that, like, you're able, like, some juries will be convinced that, yeah, that seems normal. I would do that.
Yeah, I think you just have to play sympathy, right? Like, I don't even, I mean, like, I'm not a lawyer. Obviously, you're not a lawyer. I don't even know how you get, like, what is the argument against that? Like, do you just have to play, like, sympathy that you're just, like, so distraught you couldn't
I guess make so. I mean, it's essentially what they say, right? That he was so worried about what people would think. And, because, I mean, like, it seems like it's damning evidence, right? That they literally, like, you're like, oh, no, I killed him. Like, that's, you know, I'm not denying. I feel like that's,
I hid the body.
That you have to, like, kind of admit some guilt, right? Like, oh no, I know I did this, but I didn't mean to. And you know this other, like, crazy, horrific, weird-ass shit thing? That's because I was worried about the first thing. So, like, the first thing I did, so, but we're, you know, it was an accident. But this other thing that's crazy, it's because of the first thing. So, are we good?
Yeah, it's so strange to me. I will never be this rich, I don't think.
No.
To be able to get off of a murder like that.
No. And the only other note that I have at the very end is I just sort of liked Gosling sort of humming his own theme song, I guess, in the elevator at the very end as he's going up to his business or whatever. I just like that he was like doing this like little like song. Like he's, I think it's just supposed to show like, oh, he's not fazed by all of this, right? Like he's still just a guy who is a sociopath. But I just liked Gosling in that moment, you know, humming and sort of singing a little song as he's waiting for the elevator to go up to his office. Like just a weird little character quirk, I guess, in a movie filled with weird big character quirks.
I agree. I want to talk a little bit about Gosling being older because like we haven't really discussed that and we haven't seen it before.
Right. Let me take a look. I don't think we have either. But yeah, talk about it.
Did it feel like Christian Bale wearing the Vice costume last year?
A little bit.
To me, that's all I could see when I was thinking about it.
Because it's fun. I feel like this is not as necessarily good. Well, I don't know. I don't know if it's as good as Vice because I feel like you can't really see, or maybe I just couldn't really see, Christian Bale in that thing. Like, this just looks like old Ryan Gosling. You know what I mean?
It does. On a similar note, after watching The Jinx, the father, the actor that plays the father in this movie looks a lot like Robert Durst did in The Jinx. Do you think so too? Like, I think that facially they look like very, very similar.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
Because I have the, like, the image of the poster for the Jinx in my head.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, they picked an actor that looked like a lot like him. And I can see this guy being Robert Durst's dad. It just, for some reason, they just look very similar to me.
Well, I mean, I also have that from that interview. Like, my fantasy baseball team name for a year or two was Robert Durst's burp. And I just had that picture of him, like, hiccuping at during that interview.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I know very well, like, aside from the cover of it, which I guess is more sort of, you know, shadowy and kind of menacing, but I just have that, like, he's, like, frail and panicked and just, like,
yeah.
I was thinking about this movie because, you know, I'm keeping on Letterboxd.
Yes.
If you're listening, you're on Letterboxd. I'm at Soul Popped on there. And we're going to play the Letterboxd game shortly, and I'm not going to mess it up this time. I was ranking because I have all the movies ranked, and I have this out of the 14 movies that we've covered so far. Last is Lost River, just because that's different kind of thing because he's not in there, Ghost River. I have this either, other than Lost River, either last or next to last. Like, it's not, I don't think it's a bad movie. But I just think that it's kind of twofold that, like, it's not great, number one, but also just compared to everything else we've covered, it's just lower tier. And it's not bad, but it's just in a way like what Mike and I are doing over on Cruise Club starting from the beginning. Like, we've been so spoiled with, like, almost all great movies.
Yes.
Even if they're not exactly starting. Specifically your taste. For a movie that's good, like, you know, a B or a C plus or, you know, whatever. Like, a good, like, not a great movie, but, like, a good movie is kind of the worst thing he's done. It's good. Like, it's impressive.
I think that it's because we're starting at the beginning. So we're blessed with all, like, the recent great movies.
Yeah, like La La Land, of course, the greatest movie.
And two, I think that for me, I give this a lot more credence because I know the story of Robert Durst and I love the Jinx so much that I like it more. But I also, like, I really like Goss in this movie. I don't think that he's bad in the movie. I think that he does a good job acting. Like, I like him in it. I like Kirsten Dunst in this movie a lot. And so, like, I don't think that this is that bad. But yeah, you're right. I can't imagine what it's, like, higher than La La Land, obviously.
So here's a question for you. So we compared, we mentioned OJ before and about how OJ got off and whatever. We talk a lot on the podcast that we do about OJ Made in America and the 30 for 30. I think that they both have their own merits. Like, there's the 30 for 30, which is the hour, which is great. And then there's the 7.5 hour, like, if you want to go crazy in depth.
Yes.
To a certain extent, and it's not exactly one-to-one, there's the Jinx, which is essentially, like, Made in America, like, the full story. And then this is not quite the 30 for 30, but it's essentially, like, the condensed single-sitting viewing. We're both in agreement that both OJ things are watchable for totally different reasons. Do you ever see yourself, like, you were talking about how you want to watch the Jinx again, do you ever see yourself being like, I want to watch that Gosling movie where he plays Robert Durst, or if you want to, like, sort of relive the story, are you only going to go to the Jinx?
I would only go to the Jinx.
Okay, yeah, that's what I think so too.
I think that if somebody told me they really enjoyed the Jinx, but they were like, it's really long, I would tell them to watch this first.
Yeah.
If I was talking to, like, one of my friends or my sister, and I was like, oh, did you see the Jinx? And they're like, oh, like, I don't want to watch, like, 6 hours of this thing. I'd be like, well, watch this Gosling movie, and if you like the story, the Jinx is, like, the full story about this. And it's, like, a crazy story, so.
That's what I feel is weird. Like, there's been stuff on,
it's like the teaser.
There's, you know, there was the movie that came out a couple Christmases ago, All the Money in the World, which is about the J. Paul Getty, or the Balthazar Getty, or whatever, the kidnapping, right? And there was the movie that came out with Mark Wahlberg, and then they had an FX series about it. I was just like, well, I started watching the FX series, I was like, I don't care about this enough. And, like, if I want to know the story, I'm not going to watch a 13-hour thing, I'll just watch the 2-hour thing. And I feel like there's another, oh, premiering tonight, I think, as we record this, so a couple weeks ago as you're listening to this, there is a show on Showtime or Stars or Cinemax or something, like a premium cable channel, about Roger Ailes, like the Fox News guy.
Okay.
There's a series about that. It's like a 6 or 7 part series or whatever. It's like a fictionalized retelling, but simultaneously, they're making a movie that's going to star Charlize Theron as Megyn Kelly and have a bunch of different people. In my mind, especially since, you know, Mike and I have the Charlize Theron podcast, and I know that I'm going to watch that movie, and I don't really care about the story. Like, I try to give, like, a lot of the bigger shows that I can a couple episodes to see if I like it or whatever, because I like to see, I like to watch as much as I can. Number one, I don't care about this. Number two, I know that I'm going to see the movie. Like, why would I spend 6 or 7 hours on the series when I know that, like, in 6 months or whatever. Exactly.
Yeah, I feel you, dude. It's definitely feels different when you watch the completionist version and then you come back and watch the like snippet version. I think that's why we're more critical of this movie.
Yeah.
And like the story of this movie. I don't mind when like the movie comes out first and you're like, oh, I really like the movie. Now I'm going to watch the whole story if you really enjoy the story. Like if you get like the taste of the hors d'oeuvres first and then you're like, okay, the appetizers. Right. And then you're like, oh, I like this. I'm going to keep watching this.
Yeah.
It's a different feel. It's hard to go backwards, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I also feel like that's kind of in a way different, but kind of in a way like reading a book and then watching the movie that the book is based or the
exactly.
It's like the movie version of the book or whatever, because it's like, you know, I watched the first few seasons of Game of Thrones, for instance, and then I went back and read the book. And the book has more details, but also like the first book is pretty literally, pretty closely, the first season. And it's like, oh, I don't need to read this. But I did. Exactly. I'm struggling to get through because it's like so much more detail about the stuff, about the story that I know.
I did the exact same thing. I watched like the first couple seasons of Game of Thrones. I was like, oh, I'll start reading the book. And I was like 50 to 100 pages in and I was like, this is still the first episode. And I was like, yeah, I'm good. You know, like...
And like, I don't think it's a bad thing, because I think that if you love the book, you could be like, oh, this is like, I've always imagined what this would look like played out, and I think that works. But I think once you've seen a good version, like a good condensed version or whatever, however you want to put it, like, there's kind of no reason to do the other. The Leftovers, for instance, like one of my favorite shows of all time, the first season is the book. Like, it almost exactly. Like, it's crazy how close it is. But then, you know, there's only one book, but then there's three seasons. The second and third seasons get, like, real weird. Because it doesn't have anything to do, like, they just sort of are freed from, not the burden of adapting the book, but...
Nobody's gonna bitch about them, like, ruining the book or the... Exactly, like, once you have, like, freedom to be original, then, yeah, you could do whatever you want.
And so, like, I don't ever need to read that book again. Like, the book is good, but I think, you know, the show is one of my favorite shows, and I feel like it's such a good rendition or adaptation or whatever, but I think that there's credit or merit one way or the other for a lot of things, but then there's some cases where it's like, oh, definitively... This is the way to do it.
Yeah, agreed.
Do you have any other thoughts about All Good Things, All Goss Things?
I don't think it's a bad movie. I think that if you're a Goss fan, you should watch it. Like we talked about, I don't think that I'll ever watch this again. I'm not going to revisit it. If I did, I would revisit The Jinx. If you haven't seen The Jinx, watch The Jinx. It's great. If you watch The Jinx first, you probably won't want to watch this movie.
Well, if you're listening to this, if you've made it this far and you want to watch this movie or The Jinx is available on HBO Go, I'm sure, still forever. This is available through Amazon Prime. There's like three different, one of those like the channels. So like I signed up for a trial of this thing called Docs, which is just apparently supposedly all documentaries. And I guess also like recreations? I don't know. Because I sent you a screenshot of like the featured documentaries, and the four things that they're promoting, none of them are documentaries. They're all like this,
which is
like,
very
oh,
strange.
But you can just sign up for a trial and then cancel it. So
how much does it cost?
It was $3 a month.
Okay.
But all Amazon channels, as far as I know, maybe it's different for like Cinemax or whatever, like the more extreme, the more premium ones, but like, you know, Shudder and this and whatever, you always get a 7-day trial. So like you can sign up, cancel immediately, then still have 7 days. So you don't have to forget about it. You can still sort of enjoy Docs or whatever. But if you want to watch this, if you want to watch The Jinx, they're both out there for free, assuming you have Prime or if you have HBO Go or whatever. But yeah, they're out there if you want to check it out.
Yeah, it's not hard to find. And this movie's been out for a while, so I'm sure you could find it around.
So Joe, let's talk about, hey guys, what's in your hands?
I have a glaring one.
What's in his hands?
Kirsten Dunst's vagina.
All right, I guess that's where we're starting. Okay.
I mean, well, that like when we were talking about like what are we tracking, you were like, what's in his hands? I was like, and it was at that scene. I was like, well, that was in his hands.
That's one. He's also got a saw a couple times. He's got a saw to cut up bodies. Yeah.
Briefcase.
The body bags that he's dumping.
Joints. He smokes a ton of fucking weed in this movie, right? Mm-hmm. That's something that I don't... Do you remember that from The Jinx?
No, but it makes sense, you know, in the 70s, and also just like this crazy, you know, liberal, fiscally conservative, I'm sure, but, you know, just sort of freewheeling, whatever, rebelling against his dad. Like, I can see him absolutely smoking weed all the time.
Yeah, and like, he does it for like years, too. It's not like he was like, oh, this crazy kid. It was like, no, he was just like smoking weed the entire time, all the time.
Well, he's got all of Kirsten Dunst in his hands when he carries her across the threshold.
That's true. Guns and bullets.
Yes, does have guns and bullets. He's got that chair that he throws at the wall after he finds out that she's pregnant.
The notepad. that he writes I'm mute on.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's got at the end, as I think Lily Rabe is getting killed by Philip Baker Hall, I think, he's got that newspaper in his hand as he's trying to swat the fly.
True. Phones. Lots of payphones in his hands.
Mm-hmm. And I think... I don't know if I think... I don't
keys.
Think, okay.
He hands him the keys. We got a lot of what's in your hands, Goss, this movie.
That's a pretty... there's no musical instruments from what I remember. Like, that was sort of what it was inspired by.
There was. There was a piano in the apartment, but he doesn't play it.
But he doesn't play it. Bummer.
I wish. That would have been great.
Okay, so let us watch the trailer now, and then we'll get back to this. We'll get back to the discussion and have our picks for the most least boyfriend moments. But let us first do the trailer. I'm going to give you the link right now. If you search on YouTube for All Good Things Trailer... this is the one posted by Movie Clips in 2011. All Good Things official trailer number one, 2010 HD.
Okay, looks like we're good. I'm good when you are. This is a 3-minute trailer, 2:48. Wow.
Yeah, I wonder if there's going to be like bonus movie clips up at the end. We'll see. All right, 3, 2, 1, play.
Rated
drug
R.
Drug use, violence, language, and some sexuality.
Yeah, I guess there's some sexuality.
3, 2.
This is an artsy opening.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Magnolia Pictures, that makes sense, I guess. Yeah, this is way more artsy than the movie is, right?
Yeah. I think Kirsten Dunst is always pretty, but she's, like, really pretty in this movie.
I think so, too. Yeah. I don't think she's always pretty, and I think she's gorgeous in this movie. Okay, you see him come when he... oh, he brings her to the... Yeah, that was weird. He brought her to this, like, governor's ball or something weird. Like, immediately.
I feel like that's most, you know, because he's like, he's sort of smitten by this new girl, but also he wants to kind of piss his dad off, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was more of a shot at his dad than it was, like, how much he likes her.
She's never going to be one of us.
This hair is terrible, though. He has really bad hair in this movie.
I'm kind of into it, because it's so different from what we've seen. And this sweater is kind of crazy, too.
The sweaters. He has a lot of goofy sweaters in
this. And the ruffled wedding shirt.
Yeah, he has, like, a pirate shirt on.
You know, what I really appreciate about this trailer, I know we're only, like, a minute into the trailer, is...
oh, and he's shirtless a ton.
He's shirtless a bunch, yeah. And she gets topless, too, when they shower together.
That's true. Yeah, I was...
which I was very surprised by.
Same. Never been closer to anyone. Oh, she finds the money in the briefcase. She finds the journal. Once he puts the glasses on, I'm like, you're
there's a scream. It was muted, but there's a scream.
Yeah.
Oh, the underwear scene. He swims out to the water to collect the canoe.
Yeah, that was strange.
Where he's like having a mental breakdown. He's like, I don't want people to steal it. But like, yeah, nobody's going to steal it. Like, you're...
what did he win an Academy Award for by this point?
You have to let me go.
Do you know?
No, I'll have to look it up.
Oh, and he kills the dog. That dog was so cute, too. I forgot about that.
Oh, another one of the, you know, we were talking about on the Magic Mike's episode about the Amazon X-ray. There's, like, they have two different dogs playing that dog, and they're like, you know, like, whatever. It's not named, but, like, Pickles as Ivan the dog, and, you know, Buttercup as Ivan the dog, like, on like, one of the main actors in that scene. I was like, all right.
That's really funny.
I like that the O's in that are stylized to look like wedding rings. Don't let
them get away. Yeah, I do, too. I like the idea that they use, like, some kind of, like, handycam footage, and he was a fan of handycams.
Yeah.
Okay. The trailer wasn't that long. There's, like, extra at the end.
Yeah, they got 30 seconds. It was about 2 minutes. Which is nonsense. Okay, so Ryan Gosling, let's see here. He was nominated for Half Nelson, right? He's great in that movie. He's a teacher in that movie.
I've never even heard of this movie.
And then he was nominated also again for La La Land. Did not win either of those.
Well, I mean, there was one before this, right? Because it said act. Like,
yeah,
Academy
Half Nelson
Award
was 2006. So this was before that. And then Golden Globes, he won the musical or comedy lead actor for La La Land, was nominated for the same year, Ides of March and Crazy Stupid Love, so twice over in the same year, but different categories, drama and comedy musical. And then the next movie we're doing, he was nominated for Golden Globe for Blue Valentine, and then he was nominated for comedy or musical Golden Globe for Lars and the Real Girl, which we're doing, I think, in 2 episodes. So he hasn't won a ton of awards.
Which Rachel
always...
really wants to watch, by the way. She says, like, she's stoked to watch Lars and the Real
World. Oh, I liked it. I only seen it once. I saw it a long time ago, but I really liked it. So we got some good stuff coming up. I mean, we're going to get to a point where, like, I don't know what these movies are anymore, but we've got some really good stuff still in the short-term future. The next couple episodes are going to be really good. Also, if you've gotten this far in the episode, you may have noticed that we dropped Canadian Gods and the Laws in the mailbag at the top. We have an email address, boyfriendmaterial@cageclub.me, if you want to write in. But Joe and I are going to maybe do a few of these a little bit more quickly. And so,
if you want to get an email in, write it in. We'll still read it.
There's a possibility in the not-too-distant future that this is going to go back to monthly or maybe even weekly. If we really crush this, we could just sort of go through this. So if you want to write in boyfriendmaterial at cageclub.me. Let us know what you're thinking about the Gosling, the podcast, the movies. I know that this release schedule has been all over the place, but we're sort of at a point where we're like, let's just do these because they're fun to do. They're easy to do.
Yep,
let's get through them and sort of put it in our rear view so that we can go focus on the important podcast. Not that this is not important, but Too Fast, Too Forever, every other Tuesday, sort of have this because we talked about this. We like doing these. It's just Too Fast, Too Forever is where the people are. And it's like Ariel saying,
I want to go where the people are. Go.
Okay, Joe, Google game. This could be, I don't know, I haven't done this yet, but this could be crazy. Let's see here. So Ryan Gosling, all good things.
Murder.
No, there's not, that one, there's nothing. Hold on. All good things, Ryan Gosling. There's nothing there either. It's all like trailer review interview. I'm going to do Ryan Gosling, Robert Durst. Nope, nothing. Can't do it. I wonder if we're getting too early. Like, I wonder if we're sort of predating Nobody's Looking for This Anymore.
Yeah, we had this problem when we were doing Zack Attack. Remember?
Yep.
It was the same thing. Like, when you get early enough, it's like nobody really cares, I guess.
And we're not early enough to do Ryan Gosling Age, where it's like, am I allowed to be attracted to him yet?
Yes, yes.
I also think, true, as you were pointing out in the trailer, that, like, his look and his fashion in this movie is not great. So it's not like anyone's
it's of the time, though.
It is of the time, but it's not like anybody's looking at that and being like, oh, I want to look like that.
Exactly. Like, what's his haircut like?
All right, Joe, we're going to go to Letterboxd, and we're going to do All Good Things. So for comparison's sake, Mad Max Fury Road has been seen by 370,000 people. All Good Things, 2010, directed by Andrew Jarecki, starring Ryan Gosling, Kirsten Dunst, and Frank Langella. Average score of 2.8 out of 5. How many people have seen this movie first? Let's do that first. How many people have seen this movie?
Ah, man, I don't know.
We're in a weird gray area where it's like, it's kind of a big movie, but
Kirsten
it's also not really a big movie.
Yeah, I'm going to go 17.5.
You're not crazy far off, but lower.
15.8.
Lower.
12.75.
13.275. So sort of in that sweet spot. You weren't wildly off. I think that you're sort of, you were,
I was
close,
overestimating because of the cast.
Yeah.
So I was like thinking that the cast would have a bigger pool than it. And, you know, it is the Jinx.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I was hoping that would carry it a little bit higher, but yeah.
All right. So now out of those 13,000 people, how many people, and I'll say it is a number, it's not zero, it's more than zero. How many people have it in their top four?
Two.
Three.
Yeah.
So people love this movie, just not a lot of people. So I feel like, let's see, which of these do we want to play? Ooh, we'll do this third one. We'll do Geraldine at Geraldine VB.
It's a good name.
One of the other people on here has Blue Valentine in the top four, too. So this other person, Rebecca Williams, boy, do we have a podcast for you, Boyfriend Material, if two of your top four movies are Ryan Gosling movies. But
yes,
let's play Geraldine. Her fourth favorite movie is All Good Things. Her second favorite movie is another Kirsten Dunst movie from a little before this. Actually, way before this. Like, a decade before this. I think it might have been Kirsten Dunst's first. She's on Step Up?
No, not Step Up. The other one.
Oh, Bring It On.
One. Yes.
No. Right era, different movie. And I don't know if this is going to help you because I don't know.
Spider-Man?
This was also a while ago. No, still right era. A little bit earlier than both of those. Like, this is 99. Not that really helps, but you're in the right era.
I can't even think of any other Kirsten Dunst movies.
The Virgin Suicides.
Yeah, I would have never got that one.
Her number one movie,
Avengers.
Actually, no, these are all very kind of consistent in terms of
feel, vibe.
Yes, her number one movie is from a handful of years ago. It's by a director. Oh, so here's a hint. It's by a director. It might be the only director we've ever done a month on in Film Club. And I don't know if you're going to remember the director that we did, but we did an entire month of this guy's movies.
It was whoever did Fight Club, maybe.
Mm-hmm. David Fincher.
David Fincher.
So if you think about his movies, and I don't know if you know that, because we didn't do this movie that month, but if you think about his movies, there's one that kind of feels right in line with All Good Things.
No, I have no idea. What is it?
Gone Girl.
Ah,
like,
yes.
That's like the thing he did, probably did the closest to this, right? Where just woman in trouble, or not in trouble. You know what I mean? Like a marriage on the rocks, murder.
Yeah, murder mystery kind of feel. Yeah, I get it.
Number three, also very tonally consistent. This is a movie that I think you love, or maybe you don't love. We've talked about this for sure. It stars a guy who was canceled. It won Best Picture.
American Beauty.
Yep.
I love that movie, too.
But how consistent is Gone Girl, Virgin Suicides, American Beauty, and this movie? Like, this girl
loves she has a type. Yeah,
women
a
in
genre.
Trouble. And murder.
I do. I fucking love American Beauty. That's a great movie.
Okay. Fire, ass, titles, all God's things. So this is, if we are turning this movie's title into the High School Musical version, the most simple, basic, this is what the movie is. All yeah. Goss Things, number one.
All Goss Things definitely wins. Like, that's it. But we've been chatting All Goss Things back and forth to each other for a while. I'm going to go The Jinx.
Yeah. Even there's the Jay-Z song, All Black Everything. And there's the That's Racist song, All Tan Everything. This is just All Goss Everything.
Oh.
So All Goss Things, All Goss Everything, The Jinx. What else you got?
Smoking ... gun. Because it's like he's smoking joints, yeah. And it's like The Collector.
Even though he doesn't do it in this movie, I'll call it Burpin' Bobby Durst.
Ooh, The Sun.
Is there a movie that we're doing called The Sun?
I don't know.
Is there a Channing movie? Hold on. Oh, there's a Channing movie that we're doing very soon. I think not the next one we're doing, but the one after that is The Son of No One. So,
oh,
let's do New York Real Estate. Or How to Succeed in New York Real Estate.
Moguls.
Mmm. Times Square.
The Swim. Let's go swimming.
Body.
Right. Sorry, Let's Go Swimming right now.
Body Bags.
Body Bags.
Also, related, there is, in True Romance, I don't know if you'll remember this, but there's the guy who's basically Oliver Stone that Christian said. Like, at the end of True Romance, where there's, like, that big shootout, and they're at, like, his apartment or whatever. You've never seen True Romance?
No, I know.
Oh,
I
my God. People... Also, I don't know, I mean, I don't know that it's exactly, I mean, I think you would like it, but also, I don't know.
Okay.
There's a guy who's basically Oliver Stone, and Christian Slater's like, you know, I'm a huge fan of your movies, like, Coming Home in a Body Bag and Coming Home in a Body Bag Part 2, which, like, these Vietnam movies or whatever. So I just think, you know, Body Bags, but also Coming Home in a Body Bag.
Oh. The Mute.
Mmm. Lady Guys.
Layla. Or Lola. What's the song? The Crossdresser song?
Oh, Lola, I think.
Yeah, Lola.
Not an NBC comedy.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, I like that.
Do you have one more, or do you think we're good?
I was thinking in the tone of like, Marley and Me, but it would just be, like, Robert and Me. All right. It could be from the perspective of the guy that he kills.
I like it. So, Joe, let's... Before we pick, we got one more game, then we got the awards, but before we pick this movie's most and least boyfriend moments, let's look back at our guesses for most and least boyfriend moments. Oh, I didn't guess, I don't think, because I had...
You knew you had seen
because
it.
Because I'd seen it, right. Okay, so you said the most boyfriend material moment was, Kirsten Dunst is the lead, but she's a detective. She's trying to uncover how he murdered two wives, or at least one. She's trying to figure out how he murdered his wife. She's questioning him. He's like, I definitely didn't do it. I'm Robert Durst. She asks him how he knows he didn't do it. He says, my wife would have been wearing socks because her feet were always cold. But then he said his least boyfriend material moment was when he killed her, he took her socks off and said, be cold, bitch, over her body. He chucks them into the river. So, river.
I was close. You got, yeah. Well,
you're not close, but you have river. Like, it's not, you're not 100% wrong. You have one thing right.
He takes his shoes off when he has to bury her, too, and he's a crush. I was close. I was closer than you think.
Okay. So, let's talk about this movie, most and least boyfriend material moments. You said the least one you think is his
dragging her out by the hair.
Yeah.
1,000%.
I don't know how to top that, but I will just to make sure that we have a different one, I will say not showing up for the abortion that you made your wife get.
Yeah, that's true.
Is not great.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But what about most boyfriend moment? Like, what do you think? I mean, this is not a movie where, you know, I don't think anybody's going to say Robert Durst was such a good boyfriend. What do you think is the most boyfriend material moment?
It has to be him carrying her over the threshold and having her eyes closed and having her stand on the thing and, like, look out and see the skyline from their new apartment. There's a couple smaller twinkles, but nothing like that.
I think just, again, to have a different one, because I also don't know that there's really, like, a great answer here, but I'm going to say, even though it pivots very quickly, the fact that he initially rebuffs his dad and is like, no, fuck you, I'm not taking over the family business, we're gonna do this health food store, even though that doesn't last, that's pretty nice.
Yeah, he kind of insulates her from that world for a little bit, and I think that's what you're getting at with that pick, and it's sweet.
So now, Joe, I saw this movie. I don't remember everything about it, but I remember enough about it that I'm not going to guess again for Blue Valentine. I'll get back to this game soon because there's stuff that's coming up that I haven't seen. But Blue Valentine, I told you, all you know about it is that it is emotionally devastating, because Rachel and I have both told you that, and Michelle Williams is in it. Michelle Williams from Greatest Showman. Okay. Hugh Jackman's wife in that movie. I won't tell you anything else, but Blue Valentine, which was directed by Derek Cian... Oh, right. The guy who did The Gods Beyond the Pines also directed this.
Okay.
Not that that helps anything, but I just remember that he had done something else that we'd covered. So, Derek Cian France directed this. What do you think, in a movie called Blue Valentine, are going to be the most and least boyfriend material moments?
Right. It's called Blue Valentine.
Yep.
That's the name of the flower shop that Ryan Gosling works at.
Okay.
He's working at this flower shop, Blue Valentine. The most boyfriend material thing he does... His brother-in-law comes in to get flowers for his wife, which is Goss's sister, and he like orders them, and he gets a bunch of blue Valentine's Day roses.
Okay.
He's like, oh, I forgot my wallet, and Goss is like, just take care of her for me.
Oh.
And gives him the flowers. So it's like a boyfriend material moment by association.
Okay.
And for his sister.
And then least moment.
The least boyfriend material moment is that he hates Valentine's Day. The day before Valentine's Day at the flower shop, he rubs his balls on all the flowers. So everybody that got flowers, and then there's like just a montage of just like women like putting their face in them to smell them, and they like, these are great, and but you know that he rubbed his balls on all of them, and he went for like a run, like a marathon training sprint right before he did it too, and you see him like come in, he's like, I just need to stop at the flower shop before I get a shower, and just like rubs his balls on all of them, and then just like,
I mean, when I say emotionally devastating, that is emotionally devastating. All right, now the final thing we're gonna do, let me open the document. We have to nominate this movie for Ryan Gosling Awards for...
Do
we have the Gossies, the Golden Geese, the Golden Fleece, right?
Yeah.
Best film, I'm going to say no. I'm going to put this, again, not that it's bad, and we might drop this category because we don't have any nominees. I'm going to put this just for now in worst film because it's not a bad film.
Fair.
But it's...
Yeah, worst Goss film. Yeah, I get it.
Best or worst Gosling role? I feel like...
Nah.
It's hard to compare because we know how crazy Robert Durst actually is, and this is kind of like a subdued
He has
version.
To play him.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
For sure, though, least boyfriend material caliber role, without a doubt.
Yeah, this is up there. Murderings and, like, beating your wife and, like, yeah.
Most fun film, no. Best song, best soundtrack score, no. I will say, though, that I did appreciate it. It's sort of like a weird little addition. I love how much, like, disco is randomly throughout this movie because it's just always in disco clubs. Like, I just think that's, like, a weird kind of cool... Like, I know it's sort of lazy, but it's not as lazy. It didn't feel... Like, you know when you watch a movie about, like, the 60s and it's, like, you know, CCR or, like... What, like, there's like a handful of songs you're like, oh, right, it's a movie here, so we gotta
have
this song.
Always listening to these songs, yeah.
This felt nicer, like, it felt like more creative or whatever. Like, I just sort of liked that they were just like in clubs doing cocaine, listening to disco. Like, I think that was kind of a weird, cool touch.
Same, and I wish I was doing the same thing.
Best cinematography, no. Best costumes, I'm gonna say yes, because as a woman.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even consider that. Good call, yeah.
Best Gosling hair, no. If we're going to do, if we have best hair, should we do worst hair too? Should we at least have that? We might get rid of it, but I feel like we kind of have to nominate for
worst
Ryan Gosling hair.
Sure.
Best love story, no. Worst love story, yes.
Yes.
Best Ryan Gosling scream, absolutely. So
yeah,
in therapy.
If he doesn't win that category, I'm going to be really sad.
Best cry? He doesn't cry, because he's a sociopath. He doesn't really cry.
No, he doesn't cry, I don't think.
He doesn't get punched in the face, even though he probably should. Like, of all the characters he's played, he's the one that deserves to get punched in the face the most.
Yeah, even, like, in passing, like, somebody, like, beating him up on the street or something.
Like,
right?
I could see, or, you know, Nick Offerman, just like, how dare you treat my sister this way, right?
Yeah, this is so confusing in the movie. I was like, how do you drag your wife out by her hair in front of her brother? And he's just like, well, looks like they're a little trouble in paradise.
He does not play an instrument. Best Ryan Gosling kill.
We don't really see him kill anyone.
But shooting and dismembering Philip Baker Hall, or no?
Maybe. We could. It's tentative.
I'll put it down. We can always get rid of it. Best job, no. Best dancing scene, no. Best, we gotta say, Kirsten Dunst, for sure here. As,
yeah, non-Goss actress, yeah.
Is there another dude? I don't think there's a dude. Like, I think Frank Langella's good, but I think it's kind of a one-note kind of role.
Yeah.
So here's one thing, and I want to give... I know these are more modern. I feel like Hollywood's still not great for women, but it's getting... ever so slightly better. Like, early, you know, 80s and 90s, not great. Now, still not great, but better. What I think is really cool, we've done, you know, 14 episodes so far, and we have 9 women nominated for Best Non-Goss Role Female. We have Ana de Armas in Blade Runner. We've got his daughter, Andrea Rice, in The Nice Guys. We've got blonde Natalie Portman in Song to Song. We've got
Natalie Portman.
Claire Foy as his wife in First Man. Got Emma Stone in La La Land, which I know you love, your favorite.
Yeah.
Ava Mendez in The Place Beyond the Pines.
His real wife.
Yep. Julianne Moore in Crazy Stupid Goss. Kirsten Dunst in this movie. And then Kristen Scott Thomas as his mom in Only God Forgives. Compared to other things that we've, other awards that we have sort of put together, both you and me and Mike, this is like by far the best, like in terms of across the board. Like, this is just, he's worked with a ton of great actresses in good parts, just killing it.
Yeah, I agree.
Even though that has nothing to do with him, really. Shout out Ryan Gosling.
Amen. I agree. I would like to attribute it to him somehow, but I don't think that's him at all.
No.
It's the directors he chooses to work with, the scripts that he picks.
Although, you know, I don't think that this is necessarily a big thing, but I also could see it as, like, a small factor. The fact that, like we said before, he felt so bad about having to pull Kirsten Dunst's hair. Like, maybe he's so good on set that he makes them feel comfortable.
Yeah, maybe he's a good guy to work with, and a lot of women want to work with him, you know?
So the next movie we're doing is Blue Valentine. So the next handful we've got are Blue Valentine, which I've seen, Lars and the Real Girl, which I've seen, Fracture, which is a lawyer movie with Anthony Hopkins, which I think I saw, which is one of my dad's favorite movies. Half Nelson, which I saw forever ago. That's the one he was nominated for an Academy Award. The first one I haven't seen, I think, of any of the movies we've done so far, Stay. I don't know what Stay is.
Cool.
So that's going to be five movies. And then after that, a little movie called The Notebook. So we've got some good stuff coming up for Boyfriend Material. So I'm very excited. Any final thoughts about all Goss things before we close up shop?
No, I think we covered it all. I was pretty happy with that.
Well, for all things Boyfriend Material, you can go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, or at cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us, boyfriendmaterial@cageclub.me. Check out our regular podcast, Too Fast, Too Forever, every other Tuesday. Also, if you want more of Not Quite Too Fast, Too Forever, even though those movies are those podcasts are not really about those movies, they're about nonsense. We've also got close to 40 episodes of Zach Attack, and we've got our Channing, which is a Zac Efron podcast. And we've got a Channing Tatum podcast with about 15 episodes. So there's a lot of us out there if you want to hear more of this about Juicy Boys. And then transition yourself into Too Fast, Too Forever, because that's where we're spending most of our time these days. But just poke around cageclub.me, check out all those shows. And then come back whenever we're going to do the next episode, maybe in a month, maybe in 3 months, whatever, for Blue Valentine. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
I'm Joe too.
And we'll see you for Blue Valentine right here on Boyfriend Material. So